हरि ओ श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So now we've established that, you know, through the different courses, that the only purpose of everything is devotional service, right? That's all we're trying to establish. And that these other elements then can be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So so for ourselves then, these things that can be engaged take on more of an importance. Right? Someone's like, you know, in this case the king. The king's a manager, administrator. So the engagement of these administrative aspects are what's important, right, to the person. The individual, the condition living in. To the Lord, what's actually important is the interaction with Himself. Right? Because the other interactions within the world, that one living entity is interacting with another living entity, that's actually happening. But what's the basis of that interaction, that's not necessarily real. Does that make sense? You know, because the body has a particular nature that's there from one's conditioning. Does that make sense? Right? So, but even though that's not real, you know, in the way of that, that's not actually the relationship, but what's important is the experience of the relationship. Does that make sense? Like, you know, we're not really worried that we go home and we're really happy to see that lump of dead matter that we call a family member. You know, as long as they're interacting, right? You know what I'm saying? You know what we would call life symptoms if those are there. Right? The dead matter is manifesting life symptoms, we're happy, right? So we don't actually worry about that, even though we know that. We're not really worried about it because it's the experience that's important. Right? So in the same way, the Lord, He's God, and He's the Lord of everything and all. That's not actually what's important. It's the interaction with the living entities. So the difficulty comes is that the living entity is looking for this experience of interaction that's based on dead matter rather than based on a relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense? So now, the dead matter itself can't produce any experience. It doesn't. There's not one experience that you ever gain that is actually produced by the dead matter itself. Right? It's the Lord's potency coming through that dead matter that gives the experience. Does that make sense? You know, we look at it and say, oh, nature is so beautiful or so peaceful or so harmonious or like that, but it's not the dead matter there. It's not the particular elements of earth and water and fire and all that and the leaves that makes it. No, it's Krishna's potency of that that makes it like that. These are the mediums through which it will come. Does this make sense? So now there are certain now since experience is the main thing, Right? It means rasa is the main thing. Tattva simply is defining what is rasa. Right? The situations that are rasa. That means God is there, the living entity is there. These are facts. But rasa is what's the relationship, the exchange, what is experienced in that exchange. That makes sense? Right? So now, therefore, in the spiritual world, it's natural. The natural affection between the living entity and the Lord is there. Right? And we can learn more about that from the more advanced devotees. That's why association is the most important. Right? And so, like this. So, now, therefore, those things that are the cause of us becoming God conscious and are the ideal elements within the situation or within the endeavor or within the mood or consciousness that's going to enhance that Krishna-conscious relationship. Those are called piety. But it's not actually the devotion. You understand? So the Shastras define, right? So, you know, how you say? Karna. Okay, so he's basically taken as one of the, you know, demoniac. Right? But there are certain qualities he's very known as very glorious for. Right? His charity, his chivalry, right? His prowess. So why would those be there? Why would they be glorified? Because ultimately he's a demon. Right? Now if we take it that efficiency of getting things done is the point, but then where's the relationship there? Where's the rasa? Because it only produces facility. You're taking an environment and simply manipulating the environment to get some other aspects of the environment. But still, you have to do something with that to get for rasa to be there. Really? So, but what's glorious about it is that mood of charity means a willingness to share anything or give anything. Right? Or that focus to be involved in something to such a degree is very useful in devotional service. So if you simply add Krishna consciousness, you have a very ideal environment or ideal attitude or an ideal endeavor to use in Krishna service. Does that make sense? Right? You know, Gandhari, she's very devoted to her husband. Right? So she's very chaste. So that quality is very useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because it's not that, you know, today we're into Krishna and tomorrow we're into somebody else. Right? No, it's always on Krishna. So that where she doesn't think about, doesn't talk about, doesn't look at anybody else is very useful in Krishna consciousness. If you don't talk about anyone else other than Krishna, don't look at anyone else other than Krishna. Does this make sense? That's why they themselves seem to have this potency and this aspect, this attractiveness, and it's glorified. But it's only glorified because these are qualities that are there in devotional service. But we're calling pious activities because the connection with devotional service isn't obvious. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? Makes sense. Yeah. Is that okay? So the different shastras are talking about all these different qualities that are important. But they're actually talking about these qualities because they're important for devotional service. Now, we may not, because of conditioning, we're not going to engage, we're not going to develop those unless they're going to be something that, according to our conditioned nature, we're interested in. Does that make sense? Right? The boy, he wants to get married. So then he has to, you know, be very dutiful. He has to create facilities. He has to be trained. So now, will he be more willing to do that before marriage or after?
Before.
Before, right? Because he wants. Right? So that's the thing is, the king wants something. He wants that power, that sovereignty. He wants the feeling that everybody's satisfied and everybody's happy. But the qualities, the things he has to do, and the qualities he has to develop, do that. But the actual, their real substance is that they're useful in Krishna consciousness. So all you have to do is add Krishna consciousness, and they're already well situated. Right? Stories we see in the Bhagavatam. You have all these, like we were discussing yesterday, why is it that, you know, the question was this, why is it always the Brahmins and the kings? You know, but not just any Brahmin, big Brahmins and big kings. Because they have the most qualities. They have the most ideal qualities, situations, activities. And then we see is they just add Krishna consciousness. The king's sitting there. He's a pure, upfront materialist. But extremely pious, very qualified. Right? His relationships go very well. His qualification around the kingdom, his personal character, his focus, his endeavor, everything is perfect as far as material goes. And then along comes Narad Muni, sits down, has a conversation with him, and then bingo, he's a great devotee. Because all he's done is added Krishna consciousness to those already existing qualities. So it's not the qualities that make the Krishna consciousness, it's the Krishna consciousness that makes those qualities of value. But those qualities are only for the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Right? You only have pots so you can cook. Because you want to cook, you have pots. But the cooking is more important than the pots. Does that make sense? Now, we may have a shastra because pots are necessary. Then there's a shastra on how do you take care of your pots. There's another shastra on how to use your pots. There's another shastra on how to manufacture your pots. Or there's another one on what shops to go to buy the best pots. Right? So therefore there's Ayurveda, where the qualities connect with the body and health. There's the Dharma Shastra, what are connected with the social and family obligations, occupational obligations. Right? One's connected with ritual, one's connected with language, one's connected with math and astronomy. But all it is all those things simply have qualities that are to be used in the Lord's service. But if we simply say, develop these qualities because it really makes Krishna happy, are we going to do it? Not necessarily. Right? We're standing in the temple in front of the deities. For a few moments, we're going to do that. And then after a while, we start thinking of other things. You know, the kirtan's going great, and this, and going around, and Prabhupada, and all this, and then it's kind of, no, it's getting late, and is this going to go too long? Am I going to miss breakfast? And all this start. Does this make sense? So, the point is, but if there's something that engages our conditioning, we're very willing to work hard and develop the good qualities. Does that make sense? So that's why being pious is recommended. That's why going against the Vedic authority and the Vedic recommendations is not recommended, because they develop the qualities that are useful in Krishna's service. Right? And not only that, because the Shastra is giving hints at that, you know, you can wake up that interest in God consciousness. And when God consciousness arises, they so easily match because they're the same culture. Right? It's the same culture of the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? But if one ignores this, one will, due to one's conditioning, work hard to develop these qualities, but they won't be developed in a context that you necessarily see the connection to Krishna consciousness. You may engage them, but you may not interface nicely with the actual culture of Krishna consciousness. That's why it's recommended. But more important, but we see of here, it's the qualities that are important. Right? The qualities are manifest through forms and action. Right? But more important is the quality. But the quality itself isn't important on its own. It's important in connection with the Lord Himself as a person. Does that make sense? Remember we were discussing, Prabhupada made the point before, is that the neophyte devotee tends towards impersonalism. But that impersonalism, of course, impersonalism means Brahman is connected to the Lord, but we don't always see the connection. Right? Let's say we're in a kirtan, and it's really going nicely, right? And we think to ourselves, and we tell our friend, isn't this a great kirtan? Right? But now think about it. So it means I'm trying to go through this very delicately here, so we don't get up and get distracted. Because the kirtan is connected with Krishna, and so we're in contact with Krishna, we're appreciating that, but we're just saying it's the kirtan that's great. The point is it's Krishna's name. It's him as a person. It's the devotees. That's the personal. If we just say, kirtan's great, or the darshan is so wonderful, and I'm so overwhelmed with... But it's just the quality. But the quality is connected to a person. You understand? That's where the impersonal is. Is we're appreciating the quality of the person, but we're not necessarily connecting it to the person. Do we catch this? Right? So, in other words, that's the first step, and that's because of the quality of the ingredients. You know what I'm saying? The singing's going nice, the mood's nice, the mridangas are playing, everything's balanced nicely, so the forms and the endeavors are nice. But, more important than that, it's the mood. Right? So all that there is right, so therefore, we're able to appreciate the quality. Right? So that Brahman aspect is manifest very nicely. But now the next step is to get that is connected to Krishna. It means it is connected, but we may not appreciate it that way. We may not, yes.
When you say that we appreciate it, how would we personalize that?
It's not that we've impersonalized it. It's just that we haven't personalized it. It's not that we've taken something personal and impersonal. We've only come to the point of perceiving the impersonal aspect of it. Then at some point we'll connect it to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? But it's not necessarily the appreciation. It's just like in we're taking prasad. It tastes very nice, and so it's very good. But look, in that second song of the prasad seva, you know, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Lord Chaitanya is describing that, you know, the spinach is so wonderful because Krishna's tasted it. So therefore, he getting that taste, it automatically means the person. But we'll take it that the combination of the ingredients and the was done so well that it tastes really good. You know, oh, it's just perfect. You know, it's like I heard them say, you know, take the sweet. Oh, it's just so perfect. You know, it's not too sweet. It's not. Yes, it's so perfect because Krishna liked it. You understand what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of taking that next step. Is that whenever, in other words, the idea is that whenever you're impressed by anything, know that what you're impressed by comes from the person. Does that make sense? Yes.
What if the next day you have the same shot and you're not impressed by it? Does that mean Krishna liked it less that day, or it's just your inability to perceive it?
Could be. How do you say it? It's like multiple choice. It could be A, B, or both.
It's so subjective on a daily basis.
Yeah, but at the same time, generally the karmis, even they don't know it's Krishna or know nothing about prasad, think it's nice. So I would take, means as a cook, I would take it if it didn't taste so great the next day, is because we didn't actually prepare it very well. The consciousness wasn't right. Because it's most important is the consciousness. I remember cooking things that everything's going along, you think, wow, this is going to be great, everyone's going to be really happy with this. And it's been a really ho-hum prep. You taste it, and it's okay. You know, it's not bad, but it's you know, it's nothing special. I've had times where I know technically things have gone wrong. You know, you've noticed something's just wrong with it, and you're really, really worried about it. But you're so worried about it that then after the offering, it's a fabulous preparation. You know what I'm saying? So it's all consciousness. Technique is only a support. Because the point is, Krishna likes it. He eats it. It means he'll eat it, but it just means, you know, how more enthusiastic he is. Because otherwise you do have materialists, they are extremely expert cooks. And you taste and the balances are great. So as far as technique goes, you can appreciate this is really good. But you can't eat it for very long and be satisfied. You know, because after a while the excitement of the technique being so good goes down, but the actual substance of the preparation, there's nothing there because the consciousness is not very good. You know what I'm saying? But the point is why is it so good? Because their focus is so good. They know the science, they know the focus, they're spontaneous. Therefore, they put so much effort into it. That's why their cooking is better than someone else's. You know, the guy down at the Greasy Spoon, he puts no effort into it because he's been cooking exactly the same way for the last 25 years. That's the way his father showed him how to make it. And so he just does it like a machine. But these you know, top chefs, there's no preparation they make like a machine. Even they're in their own house cooking for themselves, they can't just cook something ordinary. They have to make something so far out and wild, you know, like that. Because there's so much effort. So that's what you're appreciating. You're appreciating that Krishna likes the effort being made. So therefore, you're appreciating that technique. But you're not. But the point is, but there's no devotion. So therefore, ultimately, it doesn't please Krishna on that level. You know, in other words, the impersonal aspect is all there is. But it's an illusory impersonal aspect. You don't even know that it's God. Right? But what I'm talking about, the devotees, is they know it's Krishna, but they just may not be making, at that moment, the connection. Right? Devotees know the kirtan's great because it's Krishna's name, and Krishna, like that. But they don't necessarily make them, at the moment, they make the connection. You understand? That's why Prabhupada says they tend towards the impersonal, because they appreciate Krishna consciousness, don't understand why Krishna consciousness is so good, it's because you're conscious of Krishna. But the point is that's so far beyond the impersonalists who only understand Brahman but don't see the connection. And the most expert materialists who are also appreciating Brahman but don't even know it's Brahman. Right? So even though the devotees may be on a lower level of spiritual life, they're still situated well above anybody else in the creation. Does that make sense? Because it's just a matter of time that you start making the connection more often. Does that make sense? Because the person's there, let's say, you see, the kirtaniyar is there, all the people are there, and the mridanga wallahs are very enthusiastic, and they really put out. And then afterwards, it was a great kirtan and great mridanga and everything like that, and everybody had a great time. You know, everybody's talking about it. So the next day, the kirtan, everybody shows up. So the mridanga players are there again. They do all the same stuff. But today, they're a little proud of what they did because yesterday they said it was great. And afterwards, then the same kirtaneer who was telling great mridanga and all that is telling him, you know, it's not about the mridanga. It's about playing for Krishna. You understand? Because ultimately, it's all these things are only support. Everything's situated in Brahman. Right, you have to put something. It means, you know, the Lord and His activities. They're going to happen somewhere, right? So they're situated in Brahman, but it's not the situation that's the perfection. It's the interaction that's perfection. Right? It's that devotion that's perfection, or more perfection. Does that make sense? So we're talking about, you know, very, very, very subtle points, because the idea is that we have to be able to see why these things, why would this be important? Right? Why is it important that the king is balancing how he's dealing with his subjects? He doesn't take too much tact. He doesn't take too little. Right? How do you serve if you don't have any facility? Right? But the point is, if you have more facility, but to get that facility, the reason that you need the facility won't happen. Right? It means you're supposed to protect the people, so you take tax to protect the people, but in taking the tax, the people have not been protected. Then what's the meaning of having all that nice tax? Right? In other words, all these different elements that are useful in Krishna consciousness, something's coming out, but something's not, so there's always a hierarchy. Right? So protecting the people is more important. But you're supposed to sustain that, therefore you're supposed to be intelligent. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the quality that's important. But that's because that quality of protection is useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? But the king's not going to develop that because, you know, of just that driving desire to develop love for God. He's going to do it because he's a king, so therefore he has control. And he can connect that to Krishna. Understand? Right? So sometimes they say, no, you just do it for Krishna, it doesn't matter. But it does matter. Ultimately, of course, the principle is Krishna consciousness is more important. But the point is technique also has some validity. Right? You use the wrong technique, it won't work. Otherwise, why have a seminar? Right? The seminar is to teach you technique. So if technique's not important, then why is it only Vedic technique's not important? But Western is very important. You have a seminar. You know what I'm saying? Right? Okay, so does that make some sense? You know, in other words, all these rules are there because they are forms and endeavors that develop certain qualities that are useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? So these work in the context of the king or anybody who is in a position of protection. Okay. Yes.
So a person who is developing this quality has the maximum facility to become Krishna conscious.
He has a maximum, not facility, yes. He has nicely developed the qualities, but the point is it's only association will actually develop it. But inherent in this is association, right? Because he's supposed to be respecting every morning the Brahmins, right? So now, if he's sincere, one or all of those Brahmins will be Vaishnavas, right? And if he's not, then there'll be nice, smarter Brahmins who will, you know, teach him everything. So he'll develop all these qualities. It's not that the quality, because we always have to remember, karma doesn't develop devotion. We're just pointing out that they're useful only because of their use in Krishna consciousness. But they themselves won't develop Krishna consciousness. That'll only come from the association of devotees. Right? So that's why Krishna's always with devotees. So of all the different qualities, that's the most important. Right? Therefore, in the devotional process, associating with devotees is the most important aspect. Right? Krishna is always surrounded by loving devotees. It's one of the four special qualities. Right? So therefore, we always want to be in the association of devotees. We're just making this connection, showing that, you know what I'm saying? Because when we deal with the material and the hierarchy going through it, then we don't necessarily make the connections that what is going on here is connected in the spiritual world. Because there's a difference. Mother Yashoda's lavishing affection on her son. Her son is God. Right? You know what I'm saying? I mean, of course, in India, then of course, the child is God. Yes, of course. But in reality, it's only the certain qualities of the Lord that's manifesting through the child that brings out that attraction and everything. You see it in connection with the Lord, then you become purified. You don't, you're bound in illusion. So that's why we're only making on this one aspect so that we can appreciate that these different works of the acharyas, in other words, the smriti, right, is applying how to apply the cultivation of Krishna consciousness into this area of material attachment. Right? But it has to accomplish that material attachment. Otherwise, why will we be interested? Right? In other words, if Manu doesn't give you the ability to successfully manage a kingdom, why would you study it? Why would you make the endeavor? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
right? You're making the endeavor because it will get it for you, because that's important to you. But therefore, Krishna consciousness is given through that medium. Does that make sense? Like you're selling the book and the person's into something, so you try to sell the book based on that. But the book does everything. Bhagavatam does all things. You know what I'm saying? But the person's into, let's say, culture. So then you bring out only the culture aspect. Someone's into philosophy, you talk about the philosophy. Right? Does that make sense? So it's the same technique. Right? So in other words, we're thinking we're developing the technique for the modern age. Now the acharyas have already done that before. You know, they've already worked out what are the lines that are going to get you to buy this book and use it. Right? The problem is though, because it's dealing in these areas, it has to make you satisfied that it actually does do those things. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You sell Bhagavatam as the book on astrology, but it's not. It talks about the perfection of astrology. But other books are on astrology, so these are the other books. You understand? See, the acharyas are much better at the technique of book distribution. Does that make sense? So, okay. Is that okay? This makes sense? Okay? Yes. Is the content we've been going through here? We've been dealing with the whole thing, but certain sections that don't have much relevance in the practices of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, those haven't been touched on. It means those are all in the fine print. You know, it's just like when you're having, you know, it's like you have probably about 100, 200 lists of kinds of Brahmins you don't invite to a Shraddha. Right, so all those have kind of been left. So the essential points have been there. And even of that, it's an extended, because this is the Brihad. Right? And so the Bindu only deals with the essential verses. So it would probably cut out another of the ones that we've dealt with. It might cut out another, I don't know, third to a half. Like that. You know, in other words, it would cut out all the verses where everyone kind of sits with this dazed look on their face and doesn't know what we're talking, the context that we're talking about. So those ones are dropped. Like that. Because we noticed as soon as we got into the Kshatriya area, everything lines up, everybody's awake, everyone's got something, you know, like that. You know, so, in the household life, some of it made sense. Brahmacharya life was kind of like, what's that? Like that. You know, some of these different areas is kind of like, well, what are they talking about? But in here, it's like every verse, everybody's like focused. And, you know, because it's just the, in other words, the Europeans are the, you could say, the burnt remnants of the Kshatriya stock that escaped from India during Parasaram's tour. When Parasaram did his tour, then most of the Kshatriyas then he dealt with. But there were some that escaped. So they went to the northeast. They went to Europe. So that's why the Europeans have that. They're actually red. That means what do the locals call us? They don't call us white. We call ourselves white. They call us red. Because the red color, that's the Kshatriya color. It means if you've ever, I don't know if you've ever seen, a Gaur Saraswat Brahmin? They're this white, this gold, there's no red. You look at them, you think they're Westerners, but at the same time, the features are different. It's very interesting. They're as white as Westerners. Like that. But they have the Indian features. That's white. That's Shukla. That's what the Shastra talks about. We're red. Right? Is that what they said? So they went there. So therefore, you know, how you say? I think you probably give the one, the term. I mean, it's what they taught us. I'm not sure what grade it was. Either fifth or seventh. I'm not sure. When you're doing history, you know, you always world history. You take one thing at a time. So, when you're dealing with the South America, Central and South American history, so then it goes back to what in Spanish they call the conquistadors, right? In other words, that's what Europeans do, right? They have the little dinky country. They can be happy there with all their mud and cow dung and everything else. But no, they have to go halfway around the world to conquer somebody to make themselves happy, right? So that's the Europeans. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the Chinese, they had bigger, you know, bigger, more massive, more developed. Gunpowder came from there. You know, all these different, they had things that Europeans didn't have. But they were just stayed in their place, because who'd want to go outside of the Middle Kingdom? That is the center of the universe, right? Who'd want to go to some wild, out-of-the-way place? You know? Does that make sense? So they had that, but they stayed there. You know, the Europeans have to go out, conquer, and that's just the shut you move. Does that make sense? But it's degraded over the, you know, so many millions of years. Like that. But so that's the interesting part. When we get to the Kshatriya part, then everybody wakes up. Because, yeah, you know, the Brahminical part, okay, nice, you know, like that. Kshatriya, yeah, okay, you know. You know, it doesn't mean that we're Kshatriya, it's just that that's the lineage. You know. Does that make sense?
Controversial statements that come from the
Mahasamhita? No, there's no controversial statements.
Isn't there one about...
No, but we make them controversial. Okay. They're not controversial statements. This is a rock. It's a fact. Now, someone else will go, that's not a rock. And then they'll point to the ones in their garden that, you know, weigh about 5 tons and, you know, about 10 feet tall. That's a rock. This is a pebble. You know what I'm saying? That's just the context. Now go ahead.
Well, I think there's one that about something about a woman should, you know, be beaten or something. I don't even remember, but I
should be beaten.
Yeah.
Must be beaten.
Yeah.
I said, if you don't beat, then you're a bad husband.
I don't remember it. But I was kind of excited. I was waiting for that to come up.
that'll come up in the... This is what, seventh? This is seventh. So that gives the background of the Kshatriyas, the basis. Eighth is the court starts and starts the laws, I think. Ninth will have domestic law. Yeah, because tenth is then... Varnashankari, 11th is Prayaschitta. So, the 9th chapter. So, it's 2 chapters after this. So, it'll probably be about next. It'll be sometime next October or November. Yeah. But, okay. See, the thing is, this is laws. Now, there's application of the laws. Right? So, that's the art. That's Manu's not described. Some very essential points may be given, but the general is not. So the thing is I put the lock down. So Manu is saying that to maintain order, if it's necessary, right, then the son, the student, or the wife can be beaten. Right. Does that make sense? So that's the context. It doesn't say they must be beaten. It says if nothing else works, that can be used. But as we see in is everything else, you want to do something, there's rules for it. We take it that, oh no, it's just whatever I feel like doing, I'm following the rule. No, that's called the mode of ignorance. That's whimsical. Because the rule is very exact. When it does talk about it means beating the student, then it mentions that how it's done, what can be used. Like a thin cane, a short rope, That's all. You can't pick up a baseball bat and start hitting them. Because the point is, what's the reason it's being used? Why? What means why would physical punishment be used? What's its point? What's the purpose? To correct the mentality, right? So in other words, you have to correct the mentality. So that, but the point is the person's not listening to discussion or something that would deal with the mind, intelligence, emotions. But because they're attacked because of distraction of the body. So therefore, you attack the body, it catches their attention. Okay? So now, the point is does that make sense? What's this contact? Now, going into that, how much physical, I'm not sure what would be the exact word, but in other words, how physical would you have to be with a woman that you would get her full attention? Does it have to be great? No, that's the point. You know what I'm saying? Man, now, if the woman gets upset with the man, okay, and she starts physically beating him, how hard does she beat him?
Really hard.
Huh?
Really hard.
Now, there's most women, it's not obligatory that they go to the army. And after they go to the army, they learn how to actually deal with, you know, terrorists and other such persons. Like that. Okay? So this one, we would have to leave it to someone else to give up. Right? I mean, so how do the women punch? Right? When they beat the husband, how do they punch? How do they hit him? Right? They hit him with the bottom of the hand. Like this. Does it really hurt?
No.
But does it get your attention? That's all. That is what's meant by physically beating. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to know what's the culture here. It's not rules. The rules only document the culture. So the point is that it's there and something, so you just grab or slap or something, it just gets the attention. But it has to be used right, because if then they don't talk to you for 3 days, then it wasn't properly applied. It has to get the attention. Does that make sense? They have to feel it's just. So in other words, they've done something that you're dealing like that, it would warrant it. They don't like it, but they can agree that it's correct. But it's only to get the attention so that you can actually give the proper correction. Does that make sense? So that's what it means. You know? So therefore, black eyes and this and that, that's not its purpose is to correct, that is to express their frustration. So it's for themselves, it's not for the benefit of the wife. You know what I'm saying? But here, if you're taking the senior position, it has to benefit the junior. So therefore, only enough to get that attention. Does that make sense? And even that generally in cultured families doesn't happen. But Manu has to deal with everybody, because most of the society is not cultured. Right? Means in your, like in India, in your higher class, you know, families, it's considered, you know, a real embarrassment that there's someone in the family that beats his wife. It's an embarrassment, because it doesn't happen in good families. So all these Brahmins are talking about, all these Kshatriyas are talking about, generally would never happen in their families. You know, the Vaishyas and Shudras, it might be happening. But even if it's applied, it's only applied appropriately, means to get the attention so the correction can be made. If they're beating to beat, then that's an embarrassment no matter what. But if they're using it just to correct, no one's going to complain about that. Why? Because who's going to be talking about it? If in the family one of the wives is being beaten, who's talking about it? The men or the women? The women. So why would they be talking about it? Because they think it's just? Because they think it's not just. Therefore, it's classified he's beating his wife. Now, if she had done something that they would consider warranted, and he did that, and then it hadn't happened before, it doesn't happen after, it only happened in that situation, would the women talk about it as he's beating his wife? No. You understand? So you have to understand what's the psychology. What's the feminine nature? What's the masculine nature? So that these are all the considerations. That's why I'm saying there are no controversial points. We make them controversial because what's the purpose? What is the purpose? Step one, find some outrageous rule that automatically in the Western, educated, liberal, democratic, American, I guess we can stop there, paradigm, that it would be wrong. Okay, now if that's wrong, then just like taking one grain of rice from a pot of rice, then the whole thing is wrong. Therefore, we don't have to follow this. Because this is just for Indians on the other side of the planet. And so therefore, we naturally will follow our American customs. Does that make sense? That's the actual purpose behind that, is that it's not that persons who like to follow the Vedic culture and do everything make these comments. It's the ones who don't want to follow. But as we were pointing out before, is that they're missing the point of why these are there. These are here just so that one will be able to develop those qualities that are useful in Krishna consciousness. Because the Western, it's whimsical. You don't know if you'll develop them or not. You know, the person is doing his business. Is he developing good qualities? He's a manager. Is he developing good qualities? He's an artist. He's an entertainer. Is he developing good qualities? No. Rare. Like before, it was considered part of the thing. If you didn't have good qualities, you know, you weren't a man. You weren't educated. You weren't improved. But nowadays, as long as you're successful, who cares if you're a nice guy? So therefore, then if you take up Krishna consciousness, then all the qualities you've developed, instead of necessarily being useful in Krishna consciousness, are anarthas. There is something there. If you are successful, there's always something to use. Because how did you become successful? Unless you're focused, endeavor, and are dependent upon the Supreme, you won't be successful. So those persons that are have these qualities. Whether they know it or not, it's another thing, but they have those. So they can use that in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So it does have, but the point is if you can't appreciate the Vedic, which is so obvious, how you'll figure out what is of use of the Western? You know what I'm saying? If the regular rules of grammar you can't figure out, how are you going to understand the exceptions? You know, and Western culture is an exception. You know? It's a tribe. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the is that what worked? You satisfied? Absolutely. Didn't have to wait till next November. Because that's all these things are meant because there's a nature, therefore it means that there has to be considered. So that means that the wife's doing something wrong, so for the husband to be able to deal in that way, what does that require? He would have to have some training and culture to do that. He'd have to use intelligence, he'd have to be sense control, he'd have to be patient, tolerant. Right? So that's the point. To be able to apply it, the person has to have it. What we want to say is, you know, I follow the rule as I am, how I like. So my untrainedness will apply this rule whimsically, and I'm Vedic, right? And the others is that because of this, because you're using these things and calling it Vedic, so we'll throw out the whole Vedic. Why? Because I also want to be whimsical. So that's the point, is those who are pro-Vedic and those who are anti-Vedic, they're both in the same cart. They think doing whatever they want to do is actually perfection. One's willing to follow authority in that, one's not. So therefore the pro-Vedic is better situated than the anti-Vedic. Always. But they got problems. Just like we have comments about smartas. Smartas follow nicely. But they don't see the connection to Krishna consciousness. So those who are pro-Vedic, they don't see the connection to that rule and Krishna consciousness. They just think following the rule, that's Vedic, therefore it's good. Not that Vedic is only useful because of its connection with Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness makes the Vedic valuable, not that the Vedic is valuable on its own. Just as modern morality is not valuable on its own. It only has a value if you connect it to the Lord. But of the two, the Vedic will be superior than the modern. And does that make sense? You know, it is a tin can. You can cook in it. You know? And it would be a lot better if you had, you know, finished taking, you know, with a can opener and taking the top fully off. It would make it a little easier. You wouldn't have to worry about cutting yourself. Like that. But then you have a pot that's meant for cooking. It's better. Now you can say, no, but we can cook in this tin can. Yes, you can. But the pot is superior. So the Vedic is superior. Always. 100%. But the point is you have to know how to use it. But that's the difference. You drop the tin can, it makes a dent. You know, you drop the other pot, it cracks. Because it's higher grade, it breaks easier. Right? If you have a butter knife, it won't cut things very well, but you don't get cut very badly. But the really good quality knife, you can cut things very well, but you can also cut yourself badly. So that's the thing. The Vedic will give you both. The modern will give a little bit of benefit, and you know, and it goes off a little bit, you know. But the Vedic, it'll be either really good or it can be really bad. Does that make sense? So that's the one has to know, because you're dealing with a superior tool. You have to know how to use it. But the point is it doesn't. It's without training, it doesn't pump. Prabhupada talks about it. He talks about protection and this and that. So therefore, if the quote comes up about, you know, the wife, the son, or the student being beaten, it means in the context of everything else. You don't just take it because I'm angry with them, and so I can beat them. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't work. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. So, 221. No, 121. Okay, bestowing. So protection of the Brahmins. So this is halfway in augmentation, right? Because you've gotten stuff, so now he's talking about bestowing. Though dying with want, a king must not levy a tax on Kshatriyas. And no Kshatriya residing in his kingdom must perish from hunger. Right? So, even though the king doesn't have anything the Brahmins have, he shouldn't take anything from the Brahmins. Right? And at the same time, no Brahmin in his kingdom should go hungry. The kingdom of that king in whose dominions the Kshatriya pines with hunger will even, ere long, be afflicted by famine. Right? So therefore, if you wonder why famine comes, it's because Brahmins aren't being taken care of. This is one of the things. Another is, of course, people waste food or this and that. But there's one of the points. Having ascertained his learning in the Veda and the purity of his conduct, the king shall provide for him means of subsistence in accordance with the sacred law and shall protect him in every way as a father protects the lawful son of his body. Right, lawful son of his body, because there's 12 kinds of sons. So the first class son is the one that is the direct, your direct son on your direct wife. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it says the lawful son of his body. So that's considered the first class. So he'll protect him even like his own son. So now it's here's by his knowledge and by his purity of conduct. So he's more knowledgeable, or more the conduct is better, then he'll give him his maintenance more. Because the more knowledge and the better the conduct, then he will use it nicely. Now of these two, the conduct is going to be the most important. Whatever meritorious works, now here's the balance of that. Whatever meritorious acts such a Brahmin performs under the full protection of the king, right? Not on his own, but what is by support of that king. Thereby the king's length of life, wealth, and kingdom increase. Like the king gets benefit. Like that. It says in another place where it's talking about I think of reactions, karma. It will say he'll get 1/6 of the credit he gets. So the Brahmin, by doing that particular sadhana, or whatever he does, he worships the deity, does yajnas, he has a sadhana, whatever pious activity he does, automatically the king that's taking care of him gets 1/6. Right? So here's the difference. The citizens are paying tax to the king, right? So the king gets 1/6 of their bad karma. But the king is taken care of, and he's paying, that's not the Brahmin's paying money to him. He's paying money to the Brahmin. He gets 1/6 of his good qualities, of all his good work. So he does a yajna, the king gets 1/6, right, because he's taken care of. Does that make sense? So that's why charity is always important. Let the king make the common inhabitants of his realm, who live by traffic, pay annual some trifle, which is called a tax. Mechanics and artisans, as well as shudras, who subsist by manual labor, he may cause to work for him one day in each month. He may. If it's necessary, they're doing something, let's say building a bridge, you know, like that. Everybody benefits by that. Then he can get the artisans to one day in a month, everybody comes and works for him. Like that. So that's their tax, yes.
What's traffic? Transportation?
I would think it has to do something with transportation or like that. Yeah, I don't think it means
traffic.
It's connected with, what do you call it, Colombia. You didn't get it? Drug trafficking. Colombia, where all the cocaine comes from. No? I have more important things to read about. Yes?
Couldn't it also be related to trade that you're taking from
No. It means only if you're moving it. But the point is that the merchant, he's moving it, but he's going to sell it, so there's a tax. What we already discussed before. Right? So here's also in bestowing, in other words, showing that he's very less on these things. In other words, those who move things by, like that, is right. You know, so like taxi driver, how much does he make? Right? So there's not much tax on that. Mechanics, artisans, shudras who subsist by manual labor, they just do some work for the king. So in other words, they're not taxed as such because they don't generate anything. They only do some work and basically maintain themselves. Right? Does that make sense? Those who make stuff, they can be taxed. Okay. So, augmentation. Duties and taxes continue. Let him not cut up to his own root by levying no taxes, nor the root of other men by excessive greed. For by cutting up his own root, or theirs, he makes himself or them wretched. Right? He can't take care of the kingdom if he doesn't take taxes. If he takes too much taxes, then the people won't be able to function. Let the king, having carefully considered each affair, be both sharp and gentle. For a king who is both sharp and gentle is highly respected. Vriti, the prescription of both sharp and gentle is like the adage of the thunderbolt and rose. Right? In other words, where firmness is necessary, he is. Where leniency is, he is, then people will. But you have to know where to be firm, where to be lenient. Right? Because if you function on the mode of ignorance, you'll always be lenient where you should be firm, and you'll be firm where you should be lenient. Right? It's automatic. So if it's according to law, then you can make it correct. If it's not according to law, then it will be whimsical. So it'll be useless. When he is tired with the inspection of the business of men, let him place on that seat of justice his chief minister, who must be acquainted with the law, wise, self-controlled, and descended from a noble family. Right? So if he's having he's tired of taking care of the business at hand. Then he can put his prime minister there, right? So he can also then sit in the seat of justice. Highest duty of a kshatriya is to protect his subjects. Having thus arranged all the affairs of the government, right? Because up to now we've discussed in principle just all the different things of the government, right? Not much detail. He shall zealously and carefully protect the subjects. So he's arranging the government only to protect the subjects, right? And that he's not doing it just because you do it, it's what you have to. He zealously does it, right? So he's very enthusiastic, right? So, in other words, those in Palestine were very enthusiastic. Therefore, he says, "One should be zealous," because they were the zealots. They were so enthusiastic. That monarch whose subjects are carried off by robbers, dasyu, from his kingdom, while they loudly call for help, and he and his servants are quietly looking on, is a dead and not a living king. Right? In other words, if things are going wrong in the kingdom, his citizens are being harassed by bad persons, and he does nothing or can do nothing, then he's as good as dead. You know, what's the meaning of him being the king? Right? That's why it's so special, you see, is Arjuna. The Brahmin came and said the dacoits, you know, are taking all his cows. Right? But then Arjuna, his weapons are in Yudhishthira's room, and Yudhishthira's with Draupadi. Right? And the rule is that whoever's with Draupadi, the others don't come in the room, because they don't want to start fights. If they start fights, then they might fight with each other. Right? So it was Narad Muni's recommendation that they come up with some system. So, but he would rather go into the room, because if you went into the room, you'd have to go to the forest for 12 years. So he'd rather go to the forest for 12 years and protect this Brahmin and get his cows back than to say, well, what can I do? My brother's in there with his wife, and if I'll have to go to the forest for 12 years. But the point is, what's the use of you being there if you don't protect? You're as good as dead. Right? So at least in the forest, you're alive. You know. So therefore, he went, took the weapons, went and caught the dacoits, got the Brahmin back his cows. The highest duty of a kshatriya is to protect his subjects. For the king who enjoys the rewards just mentioned is bound to discharge that duty. So in other words, all the benefits that he's gotten, because how does it, it says, he builds a fort, he arranges the army, he does all these different things, he makes his whole bureaucracy. How does he do that? That requires money. So how does he get the money? Taxes. So therefore, someone who has all that facility, then it's his highest duty is to protect the citizens. That's the point. That's how you tell the difference between the king who's taking taxes, right, and the tax collector. The tax collector is doing his business. Right? It's not. Does that make sense? Anything else? Okay, so then Thursday we start with his personal duties. Yeah, we may not even get through it. 2 days we would have done. You don't have Friday.
No Friday Thursday?
I don't. Wait a minute. We might be able to do Friday. The program doesn't start till 5:30. I think the boys arrange. I'll say on Thursday. I'll talk to the boys. We might be able to do Friday. But 5:30 is when the program starts. Yeah, because if we do 2 days, we can finish this. So we finish the seventh chapter. Then in October, we'll start with the eighth. That's all law. That's where all the fun comes. All the quotes, most of the quotes that Prabhupada uses are in those, is I think from the ninth chapter. Like that. You see when you read them, the direct quotes. Prabhupada, the wording he uses is directly these. That's where all the fun is.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samadita Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Dainita Gaura.